What's up, people? It's that time again. WGN, let's join the two friends. Jason Whiteside and Rich Lenkoff in a legal face-off. Hear the knowledge they got. Legal point and counterpoint, Jay, you know the drill. From sports to Hollywood and the politics world. Not forget the current events that occur. Plus a couple jabs here and there. Yeah. Airman, listen on WGNplus.com. Airman, listen on WGNplus.com. And join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Or send us an email.
That means that we're time. It's time to talk to Rich Lenkoff, our favorite half of Legal Face Off. The other guy being Jason something or another. Hey, Rich, how you doing?
Keep that song going. I'm rocking out to it.
Are you jamming late on a Tuesday night?
I'm twerking here on my own, but
Wait, let me live there for a minute. I want to see you twerking in my mind. Hold on. I got it. Good job.
Too much. Too soon?
No. It's all good. It's all good. Well, do you stay up this late or just to do our show, or are you up working on different cases?
I'm up. I'm not a sleeper very much, so I'm usually up fairly late. I'm actually on the East Coast right now, so it's even later.
Oh, gosh. What are you doing on the East Coast?
I'm in Orlando. I'm actually speaking at a conference tomorrow. So, it's a little after 1 o'clock here in Orlando.
What are you? What's the topic that you're speaking on tomorrow?
Oh, it's fascinating. It's an insurance conference. So if you need help sleeping, I can actually tell you a little bit about my topic. But
I'm all in. Tell me about the insurance.
It's 4,000 insurance people. You can imagine how much of a party that is.
Oh, boy. Look out.
Well, we had a 90s band, Third Eye Blind.
Oh, that's fun. So that's why you're still dancing and twerking in your hotel room.
Exactly. I'm playing that one Third Eye Blind song over and over again in my room.
Oh, boy. Now, I know that you sent us a couple of stories. I want to talk first about Melania Trump saying that she wants to take legal action after some news outlets have published stories that she was an escort. I haven't even heard any. All I saw were people kind of making comments on social media. And I guess once, you know, something like that takes fire, people will start talking about it. Does she have any legal standing to fight stories like that?
I mean, you know, her lawyers have sent out letters to, I think, about 10 news organizations that have reported on this story of her being an escort years ago, and also her being in the country illegally. That part's been reported by a lot of media. Does she have a case? I mean, probably not. You know, the standard for a defamation or a libel action is tough. If you're a public figure, you basically have to prove malice on the part of the news media. So it's actually a pretty hard case to prove. If you're a private figure, it's actually, you know, a little easier. You just have to prove simple negligence. But as a public figure, which she is, according to a case from back in the 60s called New York Times versus Sullivan, the standard is a little tougher.
Is it worse because she tries to fight it? Is this the kind of thing where perhaps it would be better to let them sort of, you know, toil in these rumors? Or will jumping in then make her have to defend herself, and then possibly people who can witness or say that they were there or they did hire her? Doesn't she kind of run the risk of making it worse?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, from a, you know, public relations standpoint, you know, you're giving credence to a lot of these stories and more facts coming out. But from her perspective, I mean, if she feels, you know, if there's no truth to it,
right? Of course,
you know, a lot of them feel that it's worth fighting. But remember, I mean, the reason that most of these cases don't proceed, you know, people probably wonder, well, why doesn't, you know, when you see Brad Pitt on the cover of National Enquirer being pregnant, you know, why doesn't Brad Pitt sue the National Enquirer every single edition? The answer is, because those are really expensive lawsuits. I mean, the bottom line is, it's expensive to fight those, and these organizations, you know, many of whom are consolidated by a couple of different big brands, have a lot of legal resources, have a lot of money to fight it. So, you know, the reason a lot of these cases don't get filed in the first place or get settled quickly is because they're expensive.
Right. And the thing is, even if a news organization makes what is, you know to be a false statement or defamatory, to fight that is an extensive battle. and it's the chances of you getting a settlement are pretty slim, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, again, like a public figure plaintiff, like she is, like Melania Trump is, would have to show actual malice by clear and convincing evidence. You know, the burden of proof in a regular civil case is preponderance of the evidence. In this type of action, she has to prove by a clear and convincing standard that the media had actual malice. And, you know, that's the thing about that. I mean, it's not really that complicated. How are you going to prove that a media outlet had malice in publishing that story? That's almost impossible to prove.
I imagine, unless you consider wanting to sell papers to be malice, it seems more like it's for profit than malice.
Exactly. I mean, it's sensational, right? And that kind of stuff sells. We're talking about it. So, but that's not malice. You'd have to, you know, through discovery, determine that there was some discussion at some point that we should get Melania Trump, not because it'll sell papers, but simply because we're malicious, which, again, is almost impossible, I think, to prove.
Right. I agree. Well, yeah. You know, we don't wish her any ill will, but we will talk about these things when they come up in the news. I think that's the way to go.
Careful. You'll get a letter. The Trump organization might be sending you a letter as we speak.
Have you seen this? This is not legal or political. Well, it's a little bit political. A lot of people are mentioning on Facebook that they're getting these emails thanking people for being Trump supporters, which just kind of cracks me up. It's sort of they're obviously fishing for or just trying to, you know, they've got mailing lists and they're just sending one to everybody thanking them for being supporters. But it just makes for funny posts on Facebook to see someone who clearly would never support Donald Trump. And the opposite would be true if you were, you know, not a Hillary supporter getting those. It just kind of cracks. It's sort of a personal, like sort of defamation to some people.
Well, it's funny that you say that because a friend of mine who's a plaintiff's lawyer and not Jason Whiteside, I can't believe I have more than one friend as a plaintiff's lawyer because, you know, most plaintiff's lawyers I find repulsive. But another plaintiff's lawyer friend of mine is actually leading a class action lawsuit, representing a class action against Trump for the robocalls.
Really?
Yeah, and which, you know, doesn't seem like it should be a thing, but it is. So they're suing the Trump organization for the robocalls, similar to what you're describing.
Well, with robocalling, haven't they decided that's protected by the First Amendment?
Well, it's subject to some FCC regulations. It is protected speech, but it's subject to regulations, and, you know, they've cracked down on what you could do just because, you know, it's annoying, basically.
Right? Yeah, what is that covered by in any sort of legal process? I am annoyed by this.
Exactly, right.
You also sent us a story about Misha Barton not showing up for a movie role. Do you cover any entertainment law? Have you been involved?
I do some entertainment. I've represented, you know, I've worked on some projects. Also, you know, produced a couple films. So I'm sympathetic to the screenwriter in this case who sued Misha Barton and was awarded $200,000 plus interest because she failed to show up for production. And to add sort of insult to injury, she was boasting on Twitter that she was in Rome during the period in question. So not only did she not show up for the film that she, you know, was contracted to be in, but she was off in Europe.
Oh, jeez. Right. So it's clear that she was never even going to bother upholding her end of a legal contract.
Right. Exactly. Oh. So,
well, that's annoying.
Yeah, so she'll have to somehow put that money together. She hasn't been seen in too many movies, so I think it'll be a challenge for her to come up with that judgment.
Well, for $200,000, you'd think someone would show up, and I would imagine that also has an effect on her professional career. Would, you know, when another contract comes along, would they make it even tighter as far as if she violates the contract?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. You know, most productions have insurance for that kind of thing, but at the end of the day, if you don't have the star, you know, or one of the stars of your film, that's, you know, kind of fatal to the production. So, yeah, I mean, if I was drafting the contract for her next film role, I'd be really specific about, you know, what her requirements are and also the damages if she failed to live up to her end of the contract.
Well, that it throws a, you know, a lot of times when these stars do that, they don't realize that they're also affecting everybody on, you know, whether it's the crew, the writer, the producers. There's so many people who, you know, put their hard work into something like that, and to have her come along and just ruin it for people is disheartening.
Well, exactly. And, you know, I mean, listen, most films are not these, you know, extravagant blockbusters. I mean, there are some, but most films have a really tight budget, and you can't afford to lose, you know, even a day or even a couple hours of filming, right? And if you do lose that because the star doesn't show up, that takes an incredible financial toll on the production.
Well, as we are talking about movie production, were you on the set a lot when you were doing the documentary for the Chicago Bears?
Yeah, I mean, every aspect of the film, you know, I was lead producer, so pretty much had my hand in everything. We're independent film, so small budget, really, really small crew. So, you know, you think that making a movie about the Bears is glamorous. I was, you know, running to bring some basic food to the production. I was, you know, doing some camera work, holding microphones. So yeah, with a tight budget, independent film,
a little run and gun for you.
Pretty much doing everything, but yeah, that's kind of the fun of it, you know.
Where did your passion for the '85 Bears come? Were you a big Bears fan, before '85, or was it kind of that was the magic team for you?
It was kind of the magic team. I actually, you know, I didn't grow up in Chicago. I grew up in Montreal, up in Canada. So, you know, didn't sort of grow up with the Bears, but loved the NFL ever since I was a kid. I was a big follower of American football. You know, we have Canadian football up in Montreal, a little different animal, but I was a huge fan of the NFL. And, you know, obviously that team was huge everywhere. I mean, not just the United States, but was huge in Europe and here. Obviously, you know, it was huge in Montreal. And I actually, I have pictures to prove it. I had a poster on my wall. I had two posters. I mean, I had many, like, sports posters on my wall. I was a huge sports fan. But one of the posters was Walter's Run, the old poster of Walter Payton running up a hill and leaving, like, defenders on the ground. So I had that poster well before 85. I also had this would have been later, probably in the late 80s, but I had a poster of Chicago. It was a Chicago magazine with Peyton, Dawson, and Jordan.
Right, that makes sense.
And Tuxedo. So I had those
nice
on my wall. And, I think 85 was a big year for me. My dad, who's still, you know, alive and not a huge football fan, but he loved that team just because all the characters. He loved the Fridge, so... You know, overall, that was a big team for me.
We are talking to Rich Lenkov, the better half, well, the half that we talked to, which makes him the better half of Legal Face Off. You can go to WGNplus.com and listen to their podcast, Legal Face Off. Can we talk a little bit more about your documentary and other legal stories in a moment?
Yeah, we'd love to.
Excellent. More after this on 720 WGN. It's pretty late. You are listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Before the break, we were talking to attorney Rich Lenkov, who is the stellar half of Legal Face Off. Go to WGNplus.com to catch all their podcasts. And you have a documentary about the 85. Is it still called? I'm looking at an article about the making of it. Is 85 the untold story of the greatest team in pro football history?
We shorten it just because it was a bit of a mouthful. It's 85. The greatest team in pro football history. So, yes, that is the title.
When people argue with you about that, because I'm guessing someone's got to come up to you and posit that there's another team that is greater, who do they try to say?
I mean, literally all the time. Like tonight, I ran into a buddy of mine from New Orleans, and he was giving us crap about the 72 Dolphins. That's usually, you know, it's either the 72 Dolphins were undefeated. Right.
Right.
It was only a 12-game season back then. So.
Oh, see? Not even the same.
Who can't win 12 games? So that team's mentioned. And then, you know, the Steelers from the 70s that won 4 rings under Bradshaw. That team is mentioned. But, I mean, you know, we think that it's a no-brainer. This team for one season, one year. They lost one game.
Which was the Miami Dolphins, oddly enough.
Right. Right, exactly. So, yeah, we think that the title is appropriate for sure.
For all the stories that you capture in this documentary, what's one of your favorite things on the field that that came through from the all the coverage that you did with the players?
It's a good question. I mean, you know, one story that I love that I didn't know about, like, what we tried to deliver, because, you know, obviously there was a 30 for 30 that was on the same subject that came out 6 months ago or so, which we thought was, you know, great product. Ours is a little bit different take. And what we're trying to deliver is some stuff you haven't heard before. I mean, inevitably, listen, you know, this team has been well covered. There's only, you know, there's only so much new. But we did uncover some pretty cool stories. And one of them was just about the Gatorade bath, the Gatorade shower that we're all so familiar with.
Yeah.
Conventional wisdom was always that was invented by Harry Carson of the Giants in 86. They were dousing Bill Parcells a lot. And what Hampton tells us in the film is that the Bears actually came up with the idea first in 85. So I won't tell you more about the details of that, but that was one thing that I had never heard before. And there's a million cool stories like that, and a lot of, you know, really touching stuff about the teammates and, you know, of course, some guys who aren't around anymore. So, yeah, there's some good stuff in there.
Yeah, and I had the pleasure of meeting some of the players at an event last year. Richard Dent, Otis Wilson, what a great guy. And ages so well. He looks good.
You know, Otis is our co-producer. He's the he was the Bear that we, you know, worked on the film with. And, I mean, he looks like, tell him every time I see him, he looks like he could go play tomorrow. I mean,
I agree.
Phenomenal shape. Great guy. I mean, you know, the amazing thing is these guys, and what I always thought was really unique, what actually really first sort of made me come up with the idea was, how many other teams in any sport, in any city, in any year, could you still see around town 30 years later? I mean, it's impossible. Like, you know, can you name four players from the, I don't know, 07 Patriots or the, like, 2012 Giants, any of these teams? I mean,
no.
You know, a week later, they're forgotten about. Yet 31 years later, you know, Otis Wilson gets requests, you know, almost every weekend of the year to appear somewhere. So it's kind of unique.
Yeah, those guys really they made playing sports not just something that we admired, and their athleticism was amazing, their prowess is undeniable, but they just seemed to have so much fun. Whether or not that was real or created, we really just enjoyed them. It was just a great year to be in Chicago.
Yeah, I wish I was here that year, but, you know, just living in a different country.
Sure.
I still feel like, you know, I follow the team, you know, and to your point, yeah, I mean, just amazing characters and lots of fun, and great year for the city of Chicago.
We do have to take a break, but you know what, let's just, and I hate to do this quickly, Esmeralda, I know that you had posted a story on your page that made your skin crawl, and you asked if you were taking crazy pills. Yet another judge has decided no jail for a rape case for an athlete who is going off to college. He admitted he was charged with raping two girls at a party, admitted to raping one of them, and the judge has decided to give him probation. And if he, you know, makes it through probation without any issues, apparently his record will be clear. He does not have to register as a sexual offender. And this is the kind of thing that just makes us crazy. Is it this hard to get judges? I mean, what is the standard for giving someone jail time for rape?
You know, it's nuts. I mean, I saw the story. You know, it reminds us of the Stanford Stanford case that was similar. It's ridiculous. I mean, I think the judge is way off, you know, and it's not only inappropriate for this particular defendant, but the larger message that it sends to women who have been abused, to men, to society in general is, you know, you do this to not one but two women and you're going to get a slap on the wrist. I mean, I've got no good answer as to why this judge would do that. Except for, you know, this guy was young, and I guess from reading the judge's decision, he felt that it would have, you know, an adverse effect on his life. But hey, judge, what about the effect it had on these two women? Right,
right.
It will never be the same.
Right.
So I think it's nuts.
Is this the kind of thing? Is this the kind of thing that the only resolution is to pay attention to what judges in your community, in your counties are doing, and hold them accountable and vote them out?
No question. I mean, a lot of these judges do run for office. I mean, some are appointed, but yeah, I mean, there's no question that this judge should face the music for this decision that he made. And, you know, I don't know if this judge is appointed or elected, but definitely there should be some repercussions for it.
Well, I thank you for helping us have a conversation about this and a lot of other legal cases. And we look forward to talking to you next week, I hope. And I'll see you on Saturday for the screening.
Yeah, we're holding a screening for like a sneak preview for some friends and family. So, yeah, would love to see you there.
That'd be great. All right. Have a great night. I hope you get some sleep. But otherwise, you know, you and I, besides, even when we try to sleep, something's going to wake us up. There's no getting sure around it. Whether it's our thoughts or the people being loud down the hall. Have a great night, Rich.
Thanks, Patty.
More after this on 720 WGN.